A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Ram, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 28, 2002, in the series Spiritual Life, Religion Reimagined, entitled Prayer with Eyes Wide Open. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 180, Mark 1, verses 29 through 39, and a reading from the present, included here. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
A reading from the present comes from Thomas More's recent book, The Soul's Religion. It's actually a quote that he gives us from a poet, Wallace Stevens, and I liked it because I thought it had something to say about the breadth of the experience of the spiritual life about which we've been thinking together. Wallace Stevens writes, "Last night I spent an hour in the dark transept of St. Patrick's Cathedral, where I go now and then in my more lonely moods. An old argument with me is that the true religious force in the world is not the church, but the world itself. The mysterious callings of nature and our responses. What incessant murmurs fill that ever-laboring, tireless church? But today in my walk, I thought that after all, there's no conflict of format, but rather a contrast. In the cathedral, I felt one presence. On the highway, I felt another. Two different deities present themselves. And though I have only a cloudy vision of either, yet I now feel the distinction between them. The priest in me worshipped one god at one shrine, the poet another god at another shrine. The priest worshipped mercy and love, the poet beauty and might. In the shadows of the church I could hear the prayers of men and women. In the shadows of the trees, nothing human mingled with divinity. As I sat dreaming with the congregation, I felt how the glittering altar works on my senses, stimulating and consoling them. And as I went tramping through the fields and woods, I beheld every leaf and blade of grass, revealing, or rather betokening, the invisible." Words of poet Wallace Stevens. Sometimes the things that we talk about here together stimulate other thoughts, and we're talking about religion and spirituality these weeks. The fact that religion is the structure through which our spiritual lives express themselves, whether for good or for ill. And someone gave me a quote from the AA community that always has great wisdom. It goes like this: "Religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell. Spirituality is for people who have been there." And as is often true of AA stuff, there's a lot of wisdom there. But our religious life does in many ways determine the nature, the degree to which our spiritual life is really in tune and in touch with where we are and where we are living. And this morning, praying with eyes wide open, prayer certainly the center of our religious experience. Prayer is the heart and center of our spiritual life. To pray is to be human, to be religious, to be spiritual. Without prayer, there is a barrenness that certainly bespeaks a sickness of soul. A prayer comes in many forms and takes many shapes. probably as many as there are those of us who pray. Following the cue of Thomas More, who did some autobiographical writing in his book, I have shared with you some of my own autobiographical experience. And thinking about prayer, I think of my own story. I've had such a difficult time with prayer. I've been a terrible model of prayer. I've never successfully had a devotional life. And I confess that before you, my people. And it's not the fault of my childhood, because my childhood was saturated in prayer. 3 meals a day began and concluded with prayer. The day did not end without the offering of prayer. In my youth, I was involved in all kinds of prayer groups. If I had been young these days, I would have been one of those kids gathered around the flagpole on the schoolyard. Because of my ambiguous feelings about that whole thing, I realized that I must keep in check any criticism, because if someone like me could fall as far as I have from that, then there's hope for those gathering too. In my college, of course, going for seminary, more prayer groups. And in seminary, I worked with a pastor who was marked by his prayer life, and everyone knew it. If you mentioned his name, everyone knew. He was a man of prayer. And under his tutelage, I developed my own devotional style in the morning. A little loose-leaf notebook, page after page of names and causes and concerns. And every morning, I mean every morning, I rose early and on my knees paged through that book. And I continued that practice when I came here in 1960 for a little while. But eventually it faded. I suppose it faded because I hated every minute of it. It was not me. For me, it was not natural. It was not the air I breathed. I'm not sure if it has something to do with my being lazy, and it may well. It may have something to do with my lack of discipline. I confess that too. Or it may be that even way back then there was an intellectual problem that I had with prayer that I was unwilling to admit to, but which perhaps short-circuited any vital prayer experience. I'm not sure. And for a sermon on prayer in the midst of this congregation, it would be smart of me if I would let Peter preach. But yet over the years, occasionally I have helped someone as I have spoken about prayer and my own difficulties, because it gave them some hope, having a lousy prayer life themselves. And yet I pray. For prayer is the heart and soul of religious experience. My life is a dialogue. I'm talking to myself all the time. And praying may be talking to oneself. Maybe talking to oneself in the presence of that greater reality into which our lives are woven. It may be consciousness and awareness in the face of the web of meaning, the tapestry of reality of which we are a part. Certainly I pray, as I think we must all pray. Perhaps it was why I responded positively to Thomas More's book. For he has a chapter, The Instinct for Prayer. And he speaks about an impulse to pray. And I know that, don't you? To be human is to have an instinct to pray. To bring to expression that which is in our depths. And there are those situations in life when we have the impulse to pray. When there is that spontaneous eruption from within, from our depths. And so, prayer really is the heart and center of religious experience. That dialogue and that conversation that goes on. And I speak about prayer with eyes wide open because increasingly that's my experience. Because as I said a couple of weeks ago in the transformations through which I have gone in my spiritual journey, I've moved from a supernatural theism to a religious naturalism, where God is not out there somewhere waiting upon my prayers in order to manipulate the human situation. God is not beyond the reality of which we are a part, running things, so to speak, and waiting to be influenced by the volley of prayers from Earth's children. I don't believe that. I don't think one can think intelligently about that and carry on the practice with any vitality. There are recent studies about the effectiveness of prayer for people with illness, but I'm not too impressed with that either, because those kinds of studies with blind tests and all the rest, what do they finally prove? And if we are trying to prove that prayer works, are we really afraid that God doesn't exist and so that there is nothing to it? I suppose there's some value in it, but I would rather not go there. I would rather pray with eyes wide open, recognizing that the whole of reality is of a piece and that it is shot through with God. That the whole of reality is a seamless robe and that it is pregnant with divinity. That my life and your life is a part of a totality that is laced with creativity. And to the extent that we come to an awareness and an appreciation of the reality of which we are a part, to that extent, our prayer will flow. Because I think Thomas More is right. There is an instinct for prayer. And we ought to go with it without too much intellectual machination trying to figure it out. Like the psalmist, for example. What a beautiful ejaculatory expression. Out of the depths I cry to thee, O Lord. Lord, hear my cry. Hear my voice. In the case of the psalmist, a plea for forgiveness, resting in the graciousness of God. Lord, if you should mark iniquities, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness. I've been there, haven't you? When we have failed, when we come face to face with our flawedness, and then to experience the grace of forgiveness through that spontaneous eruption from beneath, and we say, O Lord, out of the depths I cry to thee. Or perhaps in its original form, prayer was that kind of ejaculatory expression in the face of our helplessness, in face of the mystery of life, the mystery of life before which we often feel helpless. For there's more of our existence beyond our control than that little piece over which we have control. And so perhaps out of fear, or out of wonder, or in the face of great joy, we pray. We cry to the Lord. Out of our depths there erupts the expression of those deep emotions that are so much a part of who we are. Prayer has that kind of spontaneous expression. And then there's the prayer of awareness. I think of that passage of Mark's gospel where Jesus has the whole village at the doorstep of Peter's mother-in-law's home. He had healed her, and now the word is out that he's there. And so they bring everybody to the doorstep. And through in the evening, he reaches out, giving of himself in his healing ministry. And the next morning, Mark tells us, a long while before dawn, he arose and found a solitary place, and he prayed. I suppose that that's how one lives with intentionality. I suppose that's how one keeps from getting swept away with inordinate success or bitter disappointment by having that encounter, that moment of awareness, that attention in the presence of God. If I had been Jesus and I had a successful evening like he had, I would have gotten up before breakfast and put posters on every telephone pole about the time of the next healing service. Jesus prayed. And when they came after him and said, hey, we got something good going, Lord, he said, let's get out of here. Because he had found his center, centered in the presence of God. There is that prayer of awareness and attention, that self-consciousness in the presence of the other that enables us to keep our balance. And there's the love and care expressed in prayer. We express our love and care by saying to one another, I'll pray for you. I don't know how many of us actually do it, but we all tend to say it. And when someone we love or when we ourselves come into crisis. Again, it's simply natural. It's instinctive to pray. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, one of my closest friends, a colleague in ministry for over 40 years, a person known to this congregation, Herman Ritter, experienced a stroke. And when I got the news, Nancy had the phone message, it impacted me because I realized how meaningful is that relationship. And I said to him, I came to see again how much I love you, because it hit me when he went through that. And going through that, out of which he came rather well, they discovered an aneurysm growing and the necessity of serious surgery. Last Tuesday at Dubas, because Bud is a member of the table, we discussed his forthcoming surgery scheduled for last Friday. And we raised our glass to him with eyes wide open. And we expressed our love and our care, and that we would carry him in our hearts and in our minds. And as we broke up, we embraced him. And then the surgery on Friday. We actually talked at the table about prayer. And to say, we will pray for you, means we care for you. We love you. We yearn for all of the recuperative, health-giving, life-giving powers within you to be released in the presence of our love and care. When I called Friday afternoon, knowing that he had been in at 7 o'clock in the morning, he wasn't back into recovery, nor at 5, nor at 9. And the one word I did get was critical. And I couldn't get through to the family because of some phone problem. But I left a message on a voice machine. Saturday morning I got the call. He'd been in surgery twice. And the surgeon had been with him for 16 hours. And he was hanging on by his fingernails. And I had a wedding to do south of Grand Rapids, so I intended to do the wedding and then stop by there. But an hour later I got the call and the signs were going down. And so I simply left. And there with the family. And I saw him. And if you've ever seen one who's come through that kind of trauma, you know. And then I had to do my wedding. And I came back, and the bed was removed. And I found he was in surgery again. A third time. And so I sat with Lenora. I just sat with her. And then her pastor came, and so I sat through that, and then we had prayer with eyes closed and hands held. And then I remained because I was determined to stay until the surgeon came back. And when he came back, the news was somewhat good. They thought they had things stabilized. But he said the trauma the body has experienced is extreme. He is critically ill. And he left. And then I was left with her. And how do you leave? I left with eyes wide open. I told her today I would be preaching about prayer, and the only way I knew to pray for Bud, for her, was face to face, to say, I hold you in my heart. Because I believe that with all of the marvelous technology and the tremendous dedication of the medical people, there is a process underway. And I stand by that process and wait and hope, believing that my presence and my love and my care are the only prayer that can make a difference. I don't say these things because I know them. I only share with you my experience. And I know that I have never had a successful devotional life in decades. But I pray all the time with eyes wide open, feeling myself a part of the web of life and meaning and community that is you. And for me, that's enough. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make His face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. The grace of the Lord Jesus Christ be with you now and forever. And if that seems to be in contrast to what I just said, it's not. As I was going into Grand Rapids in the car, Blue Lake Public Radio had a jazz program that I've enjoyed on occasion. But I needed to put in Beethoven's Missa Solemnis, Kyrie, Gloria, Credo, to be washed over with sacred sound, with words and symbols of the deepest nurture that say to me, all is well.